this is a good recording, man.
Yeah, brother, like, stop right on.
Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning to you, Calvin, my friend. How you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good, Earl. You know, it was a good night to stay in last night.
Yeah, it was, man. It was. You know, normally, the old axiom is April showers bring Mayflowers, but it was March showers brought April flowers, and because the flowers are out, and we've, you know, had some really, you know, great growing weather, and man, I mean, my grass is as green as I think it'll be all year. And the flowers and all those things are up, and it's absolutely amazing how far ahead we are with growth. The trees are budding, and man, we're almost into what appears to be, you know, late spring, and we're into early spring. And so, man, really excited. The rain is fine. We need it. We can always use it. There's never too much. Well, unless you live in places where, you know, they've come down in buckets. But Calvin, you know, when you went to college, you stayed on campus, right?
I stayed on campus my freshman year, and then my sophomore year, I lived at home.
Oh, okay.
And then the last 2 years, I lived off campus with some friends.
So, look, man, what are your thoughts on, and again, you're just starting out your adult life, rent, tenants, and landlords. Many college students who live off campus, and, you know, especially in Milwaukee is a university town, Marquette, UWM, and there are many young students who rent, you know, rooms and apartments, and really, to be honest with you, they're at the mercy of the people who own the buildings. You ever hear any stories about that?
Yeah, I definitely have. I know I went to Whitewater, so it was relatively affordable, but there's really only two ownership groups that own properties in Whitewater, and like it was, so I'm sure it was much more affordable than Madison or Milwaukee, but definitely the prices seemed unfair.
But see, you just hit the nail on the head before we even got started. Only two groups own these facilities. And this has been going on, and they've allowed, you know, corporations and managers to buy up all the properties around universities. And man, they just treat the people any way they want to treat them. They rent month to month. And so if something occurs that, you know, people may not like, boom, they're out. And so where can you go, you know, in month to month, you know, rentals, which is what happens so many times. I know so many people, man, who, well, I don't know anymore, but I do know, I don't know them personally, but I read the stories of so many people who really are in a bad situation because they're renters. And it doesn't mean that everybody is a bad landlord. But clearly, man, month-to-month leases are really just a bad situation for people who rent. They're great situations, I guess, for the property managers and the owners, because there's always somebody looking for a place. But Calvin, if you're the person who's being moved out, it's not an easy thing to do. And most people who struggle with these kinds of things are people who clearly can't afford much else. You know, when you live in a place that's maybe, you know, $600-$700 for a room and for an apartment, and there are some, but you can imagine what an apartment for $600 or $700 must look like today. But people only get an opportunity, and they can't get any security. And what I mean by security is to know that you're going to be able to be in one place for an extended period of time. You're fortunate that you've got your parents, right?
For sure.
Man, there are people who don't have that. And here's a story, man, that's kind of heartbreaking. She's not alone, because I've heard these stories over and over and over again, and it doesn't get any easier. Here's a woman, 57 years old, and, you know, in today's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, how is this legal? Tenant on month-to-month lease left short on options when landlord decides to renovate. So what happened was, landlords came through and bought up, not landlords, but investment firms, came through and bought up almost all of these properties. And, you know, you can't really blame the owner who owns one of those properties. And they've been, you know, owning the properties for some time. Phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. And somebody comes in and offers a truckload of money for you and your property. And so the landlord, you know, is saying, hey, man, you know, being a landlord is not an easy undertaking, Calvin. I don't know if you know any, but, you know, when you've got to worry about your property, whether it's going to be damaged, whether the person's going to move out, all of those different things, you know, going to court, being a landlord is not easy. Keeping properties updated, all those things. But you know that when you get into it. And so what happens is, you know, the landlord is offered a way out, and I don't mind that. The problem, Calvin, is when investment firms buy up everything. People with money, huge sums of money, and groups buy up these properties, and now they put people in horrible, horrible situations. I see my good friend Sharky is on the line. Hey, Sharky, how you doing, my friend?
Top of the morning to you, Mr. Earl. And we're right in the wheel well today. My representative from the state is our favorite Speaker of the House, too, and owns lots of properties.
Robin Voss.
That he rents out. I'm sorry?
Robin Voss?
Robin Voss.
Yes.
Robin Voss.
Yes.
And I had mentioned when Matt Flynn was still on board with you, and I enjoyed his segments as well. He was supplied with the information that came out of Walworth. And if you do CCAP, you'll see a happy, happy days that we can learn from Robin Voss so it doesn't happen to other people. But he is the one that made laws such that, and I'm not a lawyer, but I play one on TV. He's the one. He makes it very easy for people to get in situations where they're struggling, the struggle that you speak of, and he has increased ability to be able to force all these people's grievances with court documents that make him almost a steel man as far as trying to get any movement out of the courts. And that's sticking in a lot of people's craws too. So Robin Voss is a favorite of our landlords, and the newspapers out there, when I say paper, anything out of CCAP for the civil court is going to be useful if people want to
Sharky, I don't want to beat up on individual landlords because, you know, they invest money and so it's a difficult proposition. You know, it's a lot of hard work, and so people get into that. I understand that. But when major corporate people come together and purchase, there's a guy in Milwaukee who probably owns 50% of all rental properties. Or 40%. It made no sense. And I said this to the Alder people when the guy first started buying up everything. He started buying up everything 10 or 12 years ago. And then people said, well, you know, he came in and what he did was at least he made the thing look good on the outside. All of the properties that he bought, he invested in that. And but what he then did was became a slum lord and started putting people out left and right. And so they allow one guy to own 40% of the rental properties. How does that make any sense? And so when you allow corporations to control the rental properties in any city or any place, it's not a good idea. And so this is kind of what happened in this story I'm talking about. And, you know, I'm sorry, I'm a voice for the downtrodden. Anybody who's listened to me knows I'm a voice for people who don't have a voice. And so for the most part, people who are renters, especially to major corporations who own many of these properties, these smaller, you know, one-bedroom places, you know, they don't have a voice and they're being totally taken advantage of and nobody listens. And you know the worst part about it, Sharky? We act like they're not Americans. We act like they're not taxpayers. They're doing the right thing. For heaven's sakes, the least we can do is make sure that they have a safe place to live and, you know, a place that they can feel comfortable in and to know that they're not going to be put out, you know, in 30 days. Hey, Sharky, thank you very much for the call as always, my friend. 844-967-2789. I'm gonna hang here for a moment. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. You can see what's going on. Yeah, what's going on? What's going on? Tell me. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. You know, I was talking about the fact that when corporations are allowed to buy up just large swaths of rental properties, it's not a good thing. It's not a good sign for those citizens who are trapped and who don't make enough money to be able to afford, you know, a rental property that's, you know, comfortable and that they can sign leases, you know, of a year or more, and then you're comfortable there. You know, I was once a renter, and so I know of what I speak. I didn't always own a home, and I know the fear that people have when all of a sudden a landlord decides you got to go, and you're stuck struggling trying to find a place to go, and so it creates undue hardship on people. In this case, when Stacy Baker, 57, saw a notice to vacate on the ground outside her apartment door in February, her thoughts spiraled through all the sudden bills she'd have to pay. She would have about 7 weeks to pack up her belongings, find her next apartment, hire movers, and scrounge up the funds to cover application fees and a security deposit for her next place. One of the reasons why so many people live on the street, you wonder sometimes how people who even have some resources may not have the best credit. There's nowhere that they can rent. If, you know, landlords check credit rating. You got a bad credit rating. Chances are you're not going to be able to find a decent place to live. So anyway, Ms. Baker was asked to vacate, not because she did anything wrong. She paid $700 a month for rent. She had been there for several months. She lives, she doesn't have any family in the city. She had just moved here. And she was on a month-to-month lease. Well, a property firm and investor group came in and bought all these properties and decided we're going to update all of these properties because if we update them, we can raise the rent. So the rent that she was paying $700 a month for now shot up to $1,000 to $1,300. And so as they were starting to redevelop these different apartments, hers was next, and so she had to go. Now, is it legal? Yes, it's legal. Is it moral? I don't think so. And so this is where we are. Corporations and money. People with, you know, these large conglomerates can put together these groups to purchase all of these properties, which didn't happen, you know, decades ago. It didn't happen. That's why all of those places were owned by individuals. And so you got to know the landlord. You could talk to your landlord. I know the places where I stayed as a young man. I knew my landlords. I didn't have to deal with some investment firm that didn't have any passion or compassion whatsoever for me. 844-967-2789. It's another one of those things and slippery slopes that I clearly believe is not a good thing for the society. Let's go to Cassandra from Madison. Hey, good morning to you, Cassandra. Your thoughts?
Hi, Earl. Thanks for taking my call. Well, you know what? I am a little conflicted about this subject because I am actually a landlord. I own a small two-bedroom home, a single-family home that I rent out. And because of the economy, I had to raise the rent on that particular property. My insurance increased. Just overall, I just had so many expenses, the upkeep of the home. And the reason why I'm hanging on to it, number one, it's a source of security for myself and my family. If anything ever happens to myself or my kids, there's always a home for them. And number two, the other reason why I'm hanging on to it is because when I retire, hopefully at 65, that will be a source of income. So I'm not making much money off of the rental at this time because of all of the other expenses I'm incurring.
So Cassandra, so again, it was not the individual renter that I was talking about. It was the major corporations that have come together, conglomerates, and bought up all the properties. And who clearly, you know, can do whatever it is they want to do. Individuals who own properties, I said, I understand that. But I'm talking about like the guy in Milwaukee that owns 40% of all rental properties. How does that make any sense?
I would have to look at his books to see if he's actually making a profit, Earl.
Well, let me put it this way. He's certainly making a profit, or he wouldn't have bought 40% of the rental properties.
Earl, as I said, just to be fair, and I want to be fair, he may be illiquid. So I don't know.
Well, so my point is, you shouldn't have allowed one person to be able to monopolize rental properties.
That is something the city, or perhaps even the state, should take up. I had not considered it. Perhaps it is a monopoly enterprise.
Yes. And so this guy has been, you know, locking up the courts with evictions because he owns 40% of the property. Smaller landlords can't get their evictions in. I wish I had more time, Cassandra. Thank you very much for the call, as always. On the other side, what's really happened in this country with the loss of union jobs? 844-967-2789 is the number. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. That's 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. You know, this subject is near and dear to my heart. And I'm a union guy. I'm a blue-collar worker. I'm proud to say that. 34 years of my life I spent as a blue-collar worker and as a union man. And I have nothing but great things to say about unionism and the importance of unions. And so we're going to take a couple minutes, because as people talk about what's happened in this country, there's no question that the pay rate, the pay structure, the benefits packages that Sandy talks about all the time, all of those things went away when they worked to destroy unions. At the height of the union power in this nation, 1954, the year of my birth, 35% of Americans were unionized. 35%. Of all Americans in 1954 were unionized. In 2023, that percentage is 10%, or it was 10%. And so in 1954, there was an estimated 21 million union members. Now, there weren't quite as many people Calvin, look up the amount of Americans in 1954, if you will, please. But 21 million of those Americans were in unions. Today, 10%, and even worse. In the private sector, only 6% of people in the private sector are in unions. Now, Calvin, did you get that number?
Yeah, in the 1950 census, there was 150 million. The 1960 census, 180 million.
Okay, so 150 million Americans, 35% were unionized. And yet, the American dream was there. Because unions were present. And so, that's an amazing statistic. Contrast that with 325 million Americans or more, whatever it is now, and only 6% of those are private sector unions. Now, public sector unions, 32% of people in the public sector are unionized. When we talk about public and private, what's the difference? Well, public sector, educators, you know, teachers are educators, people who work for government are unionized, you know, people who, you know, police and fire. Those people know the importance of unions, and they're protected. They have pensions. They have benefits. They receive constant pay raises. Not the private sector. So they've done a masterful job of destroying private unions and gotten Americans to believe that they don't need unions. I remember when they began this attack and assault on unions. And that was one of the main reasons why they could take the jobs out of this country. Our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. Maybe most of you on the other side of the, you know, the airways might not know this, but I'm sure you probably do because your parents probably were unionized workers. But anyway, I remember the attack and the organized effort that was put together to attack unions and to talk about that unions were for people who were lazy, people who couldn't do things on their own, people who wanted somebody else to fight for them. And I remember all of those things. Even people who were in the union were so brainwashed that they believed they didn't need the union. You look today, 6% of the private sector have unions. And I mean, and so the other 94%, you wonder why you don't have benefits. You wonder why you can't get raises. Because you've been at the mercy of corporations. Oh, well, the corporation is going to do right by me. Oh, who says? They certainly haven't done it. It's the main reason why so many people suffer in this country, in rural America or in urban America. It's the lack and the loss of unions that has caused this pain. And I don't understand. Again, 844-967-2789. If you're a person who's in a union or been in a union or who has, you know, a family member who are in unions, compare what they make, their benefits, with what you make. And instead of, you know, being, you know, obstinate towards people in unions and buying what the people have said that have misled the American people who've been brainwashed to believing that unions are no good, maybe you should, you know, start listening to people who spent time in unions and let them tell you why they're where they are financially and economically. I am where I am because of the union, economically. There's no mistake whatsoever. Because I do have a pension, and because I do, and I did make enough money that my Social Security check is enough with my pension to make sure if I never worked another second for the rest of my life. And I don't mean that from a braggadocious perspective. I mean it from the perspective that Americans need to know that we've been had. Now, the same people, people who tell you about people don't need unions and they're no good, they won't ever say that when it comes to police and fire. They'll condemn all other unions except for police and fire. And I've always said, how does that make any sense? The police and fire union does the exact same thing for their membership that every other union does for theirs. Let's go to Bill from Oconomowoc. Good morning to you, Bill. How you doing, man?
Great. I spent the early part of my life in a union. Here's the good, the bad, and the ugly. The unions are great to a point. But when I was in the union, I hadn't been there 8 years, and I was told to go on strike. I was more than willing to settle for what they were offering. And some little guy, a nicknamed Tex, comes out in his Cadillac with these fancy boots, and he said, we're going on strike. And I says, you might be going on strike. But I said, I'm not going to have somebody tell me I can't feed my family because you want more. You've got more. I'm looking at you, Mr. Union Man, and your Cadillac and your fancy cowboy boots, and look at me. I don't have a Cadillac, and I don't have fancy cowboy boots. Here's my pointer. We need unions, but unions also need to be for the worker, not for the union. Too many unions were all about the union and not the worker. But we needed to keep the unions. The unions are important because labor votes Democrat, business votes Republican, and that goes way back.
So, Bill, this is why I have to push back on you and what you just said. Unions, all for one and one for all. All of us. We went on strike, and I never will forget it. And I was a young man, and I didn't have children. I didn't have a wife. And so we went on strike because the company was not sharing in the money that they were making, the profits that they were making. I was in the auto industry. And we were providing parts for General Motors, Ford, Chrysler, and the auto industry was exploding. And the company was refusing to share in those profits with us. And so all of us went on strike, not one of us. And so that's the importance of the union, all of us standing together. So police and fire, they understand the value of we and not me. And unions are about us and not me. And so, you know, we can talk about the unions being greedy, but who's any more greedy than the corporation? And so because corporations have taken their games to different parts of the country, I never will forget the company that I worked for. Initially, they moved down to Tennessee, where only 2% of the workforce was unionized. So, yeah, they took the jobs down there, did not give the people the benefits or the pensions or those things, stayed down there for 3 years, and then realized, hey, we can even beat and get cheaper labor if we move down to Mexico. So then they decided to leave Tennessee and move down to Mexico. Guess what? After 3 years in Mexico, they realized, hey, we can make even more money if we move to China. So, you know, I mean, Bill, that's part of what has transpired in this country. You know, we can talk about the individuals who are in unions, but I think we missed the forest for the trees if we don't understand why unions are there in the first place. Go ahead, Bill. You got it.
I appreciate your point of view, but I have found the most successful companies in the U.S. are companies that don't need unions for one reason. They have profit sharing. They have a company-owned type company. They're all in it together. I'm not against unions completely, but I was against the way unions treated me and many of my coworkers because they went to Vegas for what they called their convention. We actually got some of their books. I was in the Communication Workers of America, CWA, and we investigated them because they were ripping us off as bad as the company. They were taking advantage of our money, and then I had to pay no matter what.
Hey, Bill, let me ask you this quickly. Let me ask you this quickly before we have to take a short hiatus. Are we better off in this country without unions than we are with them?
No, you're right, Earl. You're 100% right. I'll not even meet you in the middle. I'm going to your side. You are right. We need unions. But the unions got to be smart.
Hey, Bill, 844-967-2789. Hang on the phones. We'll return. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. My topic is unions and the lack thereof and the correlation between the struggles that people are undergoing today and what, you know, transpired going back as far as 1954 when 35% of all Americans were a part of unions and the American dream was attainable. Let's go to the phone lines and Susan from Kenosha. You can join us at 844-967-2789. Hey, Susan, how you doing?
I am doing fine. This here, talking about unions, goes straight to my heart. I was a civilian worker with the Milwaukee Police Department. I actually was on the union board. And on 2010, Walker and the Republican Party decided to do away with unions, government unions that included the teachers and all public workers that were civilian. I'm not talking about fire department. I'm not talking about the police department. And we did lose our union. We had a small union and we did not receive an increase. It really actually started back in 2006. We did not receive an increase in pay from 2006 until the demise of the unions, and they did not give an increase in pay to civilian workers until 2015. And that was just a 1% at first and then a 2.5%. And you know, if you want to know about more about this, I would be happy. You have my number. I would be happy to fill you in. But unions for people provide you with all the benefits, health insurance, your pension plans, your yearly increases,
protections,
all this. Yes, all this for working, and also they cannot indiscriminately fire you for no apparent reason. And these are the things that the unions did. And even though we could not collect the money after 2010, I used, because most of the board members left, and there were only two people who actually stuck, me and a person by the name of Lori stuck it out, and we actually continued union services. And when one of our people were in trouble, we were there and we supported them. And actually we took the money to pay for the lawyers that we had in our bank account. We finally depleted everything about 2016 because we could not get any dues. We stood by our people right to the bitter end. And when people talk badly of unions, the union chief, the people that you select the people who are on your board. And if you select bad people, that's on you. It's like voting for a president.
So Susan, thank you very much for the call. You know, I want to say this, in all candor. The people who 35% of the American people who were in unions, you know, it was a time when, you know, most people were offered a living wage, whether they were in unions or not. Unions were able to raise the level of the pay for jobs that did not offer, that did not have unions. And so the competitiveness of what the rates, wage rates were tied into unions. Now, ask the tradespeople, the carpenters, the plumbers, the electricians, the tool and die makers, the steam fitters, the HVAC people, who make very, very comfortable livings, the importance of their unions. And they will tell you that they have those things they have, not because of them as individuals, but because of the power of their unions. The police and fire make the amount of money and the benefits that they have, not because their cities are so benevolent. It is because of their unions. The teachers make what they make and have the pensions that they have, not because the schools are so benevolent. It is because of their unions. The automobile workers, the auto workers, make the money that they make unskilled because of their unions. We need more unions. If we're going to dig ourselves out of where we are as a society, the haves and the have-nots, there's only one way. We can talk about all the other things that we want to talk about, but there has to be an increase of unionized labor in this country. I told you, I'm a union guy. I'll be at Labor Fest this year. Even though I've been disconnected to a union for over 20 years, but I'm still standing with labor because I know the importance of that. 844-967-2789 is our number. You know, Thursday. It's Thursday. So I'm going to be joined by Omar in the pharmacy with Dr. Omar. All of your questions of your medications and all of those things we'll be able to answer. in which I think is one of the best segments around, In the Pharmacy with Dr. Omar.